Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record program number 498, titled 9/11 Update, The SECO File. This is being recorded on February 6th of the year 2005. What we're going to be doing in this broadcast, obviously, is updating the various aspects, or some various aspects, of the investigation into September 11th. Specifically, we're going to be taking a look at SECO, the Saudi Investment Company. That's not going to be the sole focal point of the broadcast, but it will be the primary focal point of the broadcast. And that's appropriate because the more I evaluate the various aspects of the September 11th event and related topics, SECO seems to loom very large. SECO is the European-based holding company for the very powerful, wealthy bin Laden family's primarily European business dealings. Although Yaslam bin Laden, Osama's half-brother who runs SECO, has claimed, apparently disingenuously, that he has had no contact whatsoever with his half-brother. In fact, it appears that SECO, according to a number of sources, is not only deeply involved with the milieu of Al-Qaeda, but as we're going to see in this program, SECO appears to be something of a connecting point, something of a pivot point, something of a nexus that joins a number of the different evidentiary tributaries that run through September 11th. September 11th is one of the most complicated events in recent history. It is not at all difficult to understand why it has been misunderstood. It's extremely complicated, and indeed, I think the old parable about the three blind men and an elephant, where one has the trunk, one has the tail, and one has the leg, and they all have a very different impression of what the beast is all about. Each only has a part of the whole, and I think that much of the research that has been done on September 11th basically consists of people who have one part of the whole, but only a small part of it. It's very, very complex. And in this broadcast, we're going to be talking about a number of the different aspects of September 11th. We're going to be taking a look at SECO and how SECO relates to some of the drug smuggling covert operations of the 1980s and 1990s, specifically some of those connected with the Iran-Contra affair. We're going to take a look at some of the tributaries running in the direction of Rudy Deckers and the German milieu of Mohammed Atta in Florida. We have a new article from the heroic Daniel Hopsicker, who is very courageously and effectively investigating those Florida connections. We're going to be taking a look, too, at how SECO relates to the Islamic fundamentalist movement and links between SECO and some of the Third Reich alumni who figure in the Bank al-Taqwa milieu. Because indeed, when one begins looking at SECO, you run in the direction of covert operations of the 1980s, you run in the direction of Islamic fundamentalists, and you run in the direction of Nazis, both the old guard from the Third Reich and some of the so-called neo-Nazis that figure also in September 11th. The neo-Nazi links to September 11th is something that have not been explored very effectively. I don't personally like the term neo-Nazi. I think it's sort of demeaning. They're Nazis. They're not neo-Nazis. But one effectively has to talk about that in order to distinguish between the old guard and the newer generation. Because when one looks at September 11th, one finds both. We're going to begin by reviewing some information and taking a look at some new information about Michael Chertoff. Michael Chertoff was the Assistant Attorney General who had effective day-to-day oversight of the September 11th investigation. One should perhaps put the term investigation in quotes. We're going to review Michael Chertoff's relationship with Dr. Magdi El Amir, who appears to have been an associate of Osama bin Laden. He appears to have gotten money from and channeled money to Osama bin Laden. That's disturbing enough when one considers that there was a professional relationship between this fellow and the guy overseeing the September 11th investigation. It's even more disturbing when one contemplates the fact that it was none other than Michael Chertoff who was in charge of Operation Green Quest, the attempt at interdicting the terrorist money flow. And I believe that Operation Green Quest is the single most important and, unfortunately, in terms of research, badly neglected aspect of September 11th. Woodward and Bernstein were told to follow the money by Deep Throat, and that's what the September 11th investigating community has failed to do. And unfortunately, that community is dominated by elements that are basically connected to the people that did it. And that's why you have so much BS. You know, the cruise missile hit the Pentagon, controlled demolition of the Twin Towers or World Trade Center 7. At least some of that results from confusion. There may have been an explosion of some kind in one of those buildings by a bomb that was placed. But there, at some point, maybe we'll go into why it is impossible for there to have been a controlled demolition. That is a very, very, very involved process and could not possibly have taken place at WT7 or any place else. But in any event, leaving aside the September 11th BS movement, and Daniel Hopsicker, among others, has uncovered very strong relationships between some of the elements that appear to have been involved in perpetrating September 11th and those that are allegedly investigating it. However, what we're going to look at here is an article from the University Star. That's a publication associated with the University of Texas. I believe it's U of T's main publication. This article was authored by Melissa Johnson and Sander Hicks. Sander Hicks is probably best known for running Soft Skull Press. It puts out a lot of paperbacks. This is about Michael Chertoff. It's about Michael Chertoff's relationship with Dr. Magdi El-Amir, and it's about Michael Chertoff's stewardship of Operation Green Quest. And it is not surprising, in light of the fact that it was Chertoff who was in charge of Operation Green Quest, that to a certain extent Operation Green Quest got deep-sixed even before the FBI took it over. And as we're going to see, some of the heroic investigators who led to the uncovering of the SAR network, which was the main element in Operation Green Quest, that led to the Bank Al-Taqwa in one direction, and it led to the Bush administration in another. That got covered up, and indeed it was the people that busted the SAR network that were getting investigated by the FBI and the CIA, whereas it should have been, they should have been working with them to help investigate the targets of the Operation Green Quest, way to 320-2002. More about that in a minute. University Star from January 20th, 2005, Melissa Johnson, Sander Hicks, writing about Michael Chertoff, title, Security Risk. Federal Appeals Court Judge Michael Chertoff's ties to the financiers of the September 11th attack may prevent his confirmation as Homeland Security Chief. According to a June 20th, 2000 article in the Record of Bergen County, New Jersey, Chertoff defended accused terrorist financier Dr. Magdi El-Amir. El-Amir's HMO was sued by the state of New Jersey to recoup $16.7 million in losses. At least $5.7 million went, quote, to unknown parties by means of wire transfers to bank accounts where the beneficial owner of the account is unknown, unquote, according to the article. Foreign intelligence reports given to then-chairman of the House International Relations Committee, Ben Gilman, Republican of New York, in 1998, accused Magdi El-Amir of having, quote, had financial ties with Osama bin Laden for years, unquote, according to an August 2nd, 2002 Dateline NBC broadcast. In 1999, Magdi El-Amir and brother Mohammed were named suspects in Operation Diamondback, an FBI-ATF undercover infiltration of Pakistani arms merchants who sought to arm Osama bin Laden with conventional and nuclear weapons, according to independent researcher and former New Jersey police officer Alan Duncan and taped transcripts with FBI informant Randy Glass. Mohammed El-Amir tried to purchase, quote, small arms and ammunition, unquote, in a recorded telephone conversation with Glass, according to Dateline. That's NBC's Dateline, by the way. Dateline confirmed that El-Amir and his corporations had paid at least $5,000 to Egyptian arms dealer Dia Moshen, whom El-Amir referred to on camera as a family friend. Moshen was sentenced to 30 months for his involvement in Operation Diamondback. However, El-Amir was never convicted. Duncan, who was hired by family members of the September 11th victims to research government ties to the attack, said the reason Magdi El-Amir was never convicted was because he was never charged with a crime. Quote, by the time Operation Diamondback culminated in arrests in the summer of 2001, Michael Chertoff was the assistant attorney general in charge of the criminal division, and Operation Diamondback would have fallen under his purview since it was a criminal case and not a counterterrorism case, Duncan said. From 1990 to 1994, Chertoff was U.S. Attorney for the District of New Jersey during the period when the first attack on the World Trade Center took place. Omar Abdulrahman preached at the Al-Salam Mosque and was later arrested for his role in the 1993 World Trade Center bombing, according to Dateline. Magdi El-Amir was one of the Al-Salam Mosque's financial supporters. Quote, the Jersey City area, and particularly the Al-Salam Mosque, were allowed to continue to be one of the major hubs of terrorist activity in the United States, unquote, Duncan said. In October 2001, Chertoff was appointed head of Operation Green Quest, a multi-agency initiative to target sources of funding for terrorist organizations, according to a U.S. Customs Service press release. Chertoff told the Associated Press on October 25, 2001, that, quote, "The lifeblood of terrorism is money, and if we cut off the money, we cut the blood supply," unquote. Chertoff served in the capacity of Assistant Attorney General of the Criminal Division at the Department of Justice from 2001 to 2003. And I would add parenthetically, as we saw in For the Record Program 495, he was basically in charge of the day-to-day operations of the, quote, investigation, unquote, into September 11th. Note what was mentioned in that article, he was in charge of Operation Green Quest. It was the March 20th, 2002 Operation Green Quest raids, initiated because of the heroic efforts of John Loftus and also because of the heroic investigations of Ms. Rita Katz, a hero, a true hero of September 11th and somebody we'd hear almost nothing about. It was because of that that the SAR network was busted. When one examines the SAR network, one comes across the apparent funding conduits for September 11th, major evidentiary tributaries running in one direction to the Bank al-Taqwa and the Muslim Brotherhood, Third Reich alumni and also so-called neo-Nazis being coordinated by the very important and mysterious Ahmed Huber. And when one examines the SAR network and when one goes in another direction, one comes across the Muslim Brotherhood, people like Abdurrahman al-Amoudi, a branch of the de facto branch of the GOP called the Islamic Institute, that headed up by Grover Norquist and also featuring Talat Altman, business associate and political ally of the Bush family. There is no one more centrally involved in the machinations of the Republican right wing, a redundant phrase, but then Grover Norquist. And one of the really, truly stunning aspects of the September 11th investigation is the absolute lack of discussion of the relationship between Bank al-Taqwa, the funders of al-Qaeda and Hamas, the Muslim Brotherhood, and the GOP, and the way in which Talat Altman, Bush associate, family, and business partner, interceded on April 4th, 2002 with on behalf of the institutions and individuals who were popped on March 20th, 2002 for allegedly funding al-Qaeda and Hamas. A stunning, stunning omission when one considers the direct relationship between the funding conduits for the Muslim Brotherhood, Hamas, and al-Qaeda, and the GOP. I think that relationship is more complex than simply one of steward and master. But nonetheless, it is an amazing connection, one that is reflected, to a certain extent at least, in the relationship between Michael Chertoff and Dr. Magdi El Amir. But are people talking about that? No. Not even the September 11th conspiracy crowd is talking about that. Nobody's talking about Grover Norquist and the Islamic Institute, which is a damn bloody shame. Now, referring to the March 20th, 2002 Operation Green Quest raids, as we looked at in For the Records 462, 464, and to a certain extent in 467, Operation Green Quest has been deep-sixed, specifically when the Customs Department was moved to the Department of Homeland Security. The Department of Justice refused to share information with them. One of the focal points in that regard is Robert Mueller, head of the FBI, formerly a person who had run a badly attenuated investigation of BCCI and apparently deliberately obscured some of the intelligence links to BCCI, links that would have run in the direction of the Iran-Contra scandal, the Iraqgate scandal, the arming of the Afghan Mujahideen, George W. Bush's business connections, and ultimately in the direction of Osama bin Laden, the Muslim Brotherhood, al-Qaeda, and what was to coalesce years later as the milieu of September 11th. I made an allusion to Rita Katz, an heroic woman who basically she was an Iraqi-born Jewish woman. She then emigrated to Israel and after that to the United States. Because she spoke fluent Arabic and was familiar with that culture, she on her own initiative went underground to investigate some of the jihadist elements that were operating in the United States. And as such, she infiltrated the milieu of the SAR network that got popped on March 20th, 2002. And indeed, it was her heroic work as an individual and John Loftus's heroic work as an individual that led to the March 20th, 2002 Operation Green Quest raids. bearing in mind the fact that it was Michael Chertoff himself, deeply sullied by connections to an alleged Al-Qaeda financier, who was in charge of the Operation Green Quest raids. And what we're going to do now is to review some information that we've looked at in For the Record 425 and 456, among other shows, after the March 20th, 2002 Green Quest raids. After Talat Altman of Grover Norquist's Islamic Institute interceded on behalf of those institutions and individuals accused of funding Al-Qaeda, he did so with then-Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill on April 4th of 2002. Paul O'Neill was fired later that year. Look what happened to the investigators who had basically busted the SAR network. Who did the FBI and the CIA begin surveilling and harassing? The targets of Operation Green Quest and the SAR network raids of 3/20/2002? No. They began investigating and harassing the people who had led the investigation. Rita Katz wrote a story of her adventures in a book called Terrorist Hunter. It was authored by Anonymous. That was the name Rita Katz was using at that time. She has since come forward. She was afraid of retribution against her family, certainly a realistic consideration. She has now gone public, however, but she published her book under the title of Anonymous. It was published in hardcover by HarperCollins in 2003. The full information, including ISBN number, will be in the description for this show. After the 3/20/2002 Green Quest raid, which busted the SAR network, a nexus that links the GOP and prime GOP operative Grover Norquist with the Muslim Brotherhood, Al-Qaeda, the Bank Al-Taqwa, the Underground Reich, Old Guard Nazis, and New Generation Nazis. After those raids, the CIA and the FBI began investigating the investigators. And bear in mind that in charge of Operation Green Quest was Michael Chertoff, the new nominee to head up the Department of Homeland Security. Reading now from Terrorist Hunter, yet the FBI wasn't the worst part in the sticky affair. The CIA was. The CIA was investigating me and the SAR investigators from Green Quest and Customs. The CIA and the FBI investigated everyone who had anything to do with the SAR investigations. White vans and SUVs with dark windows appeared near all the homes of the SAR investigators. All agents, some of whom were very experienced with surveillance, knew they were being followed. So was I. I felt that I was being followed everywhere and watched, at home, in the supermarket, on the way to work. And for what? While undercover, I needed to watch out during the conference, the prayer, the rally, but I could relax as soon as I was out of there. Now, I was being watched 24/7. It's a terrible sensation to know that you have no privacy and no security. That strange clicking of the phones that wasn't there before, the oh-so-crudely opened mail at home and in the office, and the same man I spied in my neighborhood supermarket who was also on the train I took to Washington a week ago. Life can be miserable when you know that someone's always breathing down your neck. The customs agents were questioned, so were their supervisors, so was the U.S. attorney on the SAR case. One of the questions they were all asked was whether they'd leaked material to me. They all kept saying that this was the most preposterous idea. They all said that before I came, none of them had the slightest clue about SAR and 555 Grove Street. They said that there was nothing of value they could give me that I didn't have already. That it was I who gave them the material, not the other way around. None of the investigated parties had the slightest clue as to the real reason they were being investigated. Risking criticism for being unfoundedly paranoid, I must convey my theory about the investigation and the CIA's involvement in it. I don't know for certain what's the deal with the CIA investigating the SAR investigators, but it sure feels as if someone up in that agency doesn't like the idea that the Saudi Arabian boat is rocked. The raids on 555 had taken place already. The CIA couldn't change that. But investigating and giving the people behind the raids a hard time is a most efficient way of making sure the SAR investigation stops there. Which, come to think of it, may be the reason the government looks so unfavorably on the lawsuit filed by 9/11 victims' families against several Saudi entities and individuals accusing them of funding terrorism and seeking damages. Indeed. And, of course, it was the heroic John Loftus who was behind those the filing of those lawsuits, as well as the legal enactment of what led to the Green Quest raids of 3/20/2002. So, again, Michael Chertoff was in charge of Operation Green Quest. That may be one reason why the Justice Department helped to deep six that investigation. The most important aspect of September 11th, and sadly, languishing with a dearth of attention from those official and otherwise. Before we turn to CICO, a very, very important update on the Rudy Decker's connection from Daniel Hopsicker. I visited with the heroic Daniel Hopsicker on a number of different programs, including For the Record shows 482, 483, and 484, in which I interviewed him about his very important book called Welcome to Terrorland, Mohammed Atta and the 9/11 Cover-Up in Florida. Dutch national Rudy Dekkers and the German network with which he was working and in which Mohammed Atta was secreted, although secreted is perhaps a bad word, that network is apparently still operating through the Bahamas and into Florida. Rudy Dekkers is still coming into the United States. And here is an update from Daniel Hopsicker. This from the Mad Cow Morning News website, www.madcowprod.com. This is an article by Daniel Hopsicker dated January 31st, 2005, headlined, Dekkers, quote, regularly, unquote, slips into U.S. illegally from the Bahamas. It reads in part, Rudy Dekkers has been regularly entering the U.S. illegally through the Bahamas, the Mad Cow Morning News has learned. In an effort to evade U.S. customs scrutiny, the infamous Dutch national running the Venice, Florida flight school, which both terrorist pilots who crashed into the World Trade Center used as cover, is slipping into the U.S. from the Bahamas after exchanging clothes with one of the pilots on the charter flight which flew to pick him up. Then, wearing the charter pilot's uniform, multiple sources confirm Dekkers walks through U.S. customs, quote, Rudy looked like the co-pilot when they landed in the U.S., said one source. His bags were carried through customs by a female who appeared to be the co-pilot, Christina Hewitt, who flew in with pilot Marcus Huber to pick him up, and who then posed as the customer for the charter flight when they went through customs, unquote. Huber, H-U-B-E-R, is a Swiss national. Hewitt is reportedly from Louisiana and found employment at the Naples airport with Dekkers several years ago, quote, cleaning out the planes, which is quite obviously a job you wouldn't want just anyone doing, unquote. Parenthetically, this operation involved apparently massive drug smuggling, and as we're going to see when we get to the subject of CICO, drug smuggling connected covert operations from the 80s and 90s were one of the things that was in that CICO was involved with, and we're going to take a look at François Genoux associate Baudin Dunal's involvement with that. Note also the fact that the pilot's name here is Marcus Huber, and he's a Swiss national. The thought suggests itself about the concern of the possibility that Marcus Huber might be have some blood relation with Ahmed Huber, one of the principals of Bank Al-Taqwa, also a Swiss national involved with the milieu of 9/11. But of course, that may only be coincidental. Huber is not an uncommon name in Switzerland, so that is something to be investigated. If there's anybody who can confirm whether Ahmed Huber has a son or relative named Marcus Huber, that would be most welcome. More about Rudy Dekkers and his periodic reentry into the United States. Despite his reputation as an international operator, Dekkers was anything but a cool customer. Quote, he had beads of sweat popping out on his forehead, a pilot who picked him up in Nassau laughingly related to a friend. He looked so guilty that we were all afraid we were going to get caught. Dekkers' efforts to elude inspection may be partly the result of his notoriety after the 9/11 attack. Officials looked on uneasily while his international jaunts continued without let-up to destinations which include at least several recent trips to that narco-trafficker's destination of choice, Colombia. At least several of the charter flights were reportedly operated by Rex Air, located at the Naples airport, and owned by Rex Gosteiger, a German national who purchased a flight school there named Wolf Aero in the late 1990s from Wolfgang Boringer, another German national and a close friend of Mohammed Atta, according to Atta's one-time American girlfriend, Amanda Keller. And again, we've talked more about this network at great, great length in For the Record programs 482, 483, 484. And again, I can't recommend the book Welcome to Terrorland by Daniel Hopsicker strongly enough. It is a very important book. So once again, Rudy Dekkers and his Bahamas-based German network moving apparently into and out of the United States with impunity. One of the things that I would note that in the Nazi tract Serpent's Walk, one of the historical novels, or one of the, quote, novels, unquote, put out by National Vanguard Books, the publisher of the publishing arm of the National Alliance. Those books are put out as basically teaching tools. They're rather like Mein Kampf, although officially novels. In fact, they are political manifestos. In Serpent's Walk, it's about a Nazi takeover of the United States in the mid-21st century by the descendants of the Third Reich, who go underground, buy into the American opinion-forming media, and following a series of devastating terrorist attacks involving weapons of mass destruction, martial law is declared, and they take over the United States. In the book Serpent's Walk, the genetically engineered microorganisms, which are used in the weapons of mass destruction attacks, are secreted into the United States through drug smuggling networks. And again, I think the Decker's milieu in Florida, their connection to drug trafficking and Iran-Contra-related operations, and their relationship with the German/Mohammed Atta links, well, that is a very, very important connection to consider at great length. Now, introducing the topic that we will be focusing on for the duration of the broadcast, namely SECO. Once more, from the book Welcome to Terrorland, of SECO's aviation subsidiaries training of pilots at the Huffman Aviation School owned by Rudy Deckers, the fellow we just spoke about. Swiss police questioned Yaslam bin Laden because one of his companies, Avcon Air Charter, had offered flight training to clients at the Venice flight school attended by some of the hijackers. As a result of what Le Monde called a still unexplained coincidence, unquote, the pilots of Yaslam bin Laden's company trained at Huffman Aviation in Florida, the paper stated, quote, I didn't choose that flight school, Yaslam protested. I don't have contact with my half-brother since over 20 years ago, unquote. Swiss magazine L'Hebdo reported that Swiss federal inspectors were seeking information on the activities of several bin Laden family companies, including Geneva-based Saudi investment company, a financial clearinghouse for the family's international investments, and Avcon Business Jets SA, which owned a fleet of private jets, which it leased to clients. For the record, 495, we took a look at a renewed and expanded investigation of Yaslam bin Laden, who, according to investigator Charles Brizard, has had a joint bank account with Osama bin Laden for many, many years. As we're going to see, not only does it appear to be disingenuous when people associated with SECO claim they had no contact with Osama, but indeed, I think in many ways, SECO is a pivot point. But we're going to talk about that inside, too. Websites. Sister station WFMU, two websites featuring the whole For the Record series on Real Audio. More recent shows streaming at www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery. Older programs for download only at a longer URL. Link to both that address and to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. Spitfire website features detailed annotated article-length descriptions of the For the Record shows, usually up within a week or two of the airing of the show. Features a number of other things as well, descriptions of all of the shows and lectures I've done over the years, the pivotally important and suppressed book Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile by Paul Manning, now available in both PDF and in HTML, both for free, a website maintained by listeners in the Midwest that features the declassified U.S. government documents about the Bush family's involvement with Nazi industry before, during, and most importantly, after World War II, and all sorts of other features as well. There's a search engine on the Spitfire website, and also a page to click on to support the work that I'm doing, because unfortunately, I'm not like the people in the SAR network. I don't have all kinds of bucks at my disposal, but I make a really, really good go of it with a little bit that I have. There is a page to click on for those of you who would like to support the work that I'm doing. We're going to continue with our discussion of SECO in Side 2 of this program. However, this wraps up Side 1 of For the Record program number 498, Update on 9/11, the SECO Connection. This has been recorded on February 6th of 2005. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.